Most shurim, rabbanim, or magidi shurim urge people not to have their phones out. It usually takes away from the shir. But tonight, shir, because we're going to be doing some mathematical equations, you might want to have your phone handy, so you won't take my word on it or the paiskim's word on it. You can crunch the math yourself and see if it fits out the way it's supposed to work out. Tonight we're going to try to discuss some of the measurements, the shiurim, that take place at the Seder, both for matzah, maror, talakosis, and some other things. But besides that, we'll talk about some other interesting things as well. One of my favorite topics that we always get to talk about is zmanim. So how do we get to talk about zmanim? Because we know when it comes to Erev Pesach, there's two very important zmanim on Erev Pesach. There's soiv zman achila and soiv zman hana, which also goes along at the same time. You can't burn the chametz. You can only burn the chametz because man you're allowed to have hana from the chametz. You can only sell the chametz as long as you're still allowed to be nana from the chametz. So there's two very important zmanim that you'll see posted in your shul's email. First is soiv zman achila. When's the last time you're allowed to eat that last piece of chametz before you go on a break for 8 days? Get the last donut in, the last bagel in, as if you'll never see donuts and bagels again. But people need that last one. So therefore, you got to figure when's the last time you're allowed to eat the chametz, and by when do you have to burn the chametz, or by when would you have to sell the chametz because you no longer are allowed to have pleasure from the chametz. So if you look in Shulchan Aruch number 1, Simitav Mem Gimel, this is in Hilchas Erev Pesach, before we get to the night of the Seder, Shulchan Aruch writes over here, Umetchila Shah Shishis Ulamala, from the 6th hour on, Asura Gam Bahana. So from the 5th hour and on, that's already, you're not allowed to eat the chametz. But already now, the 6th hour, you're not even allowed to benefit from the chametz. So the question is, says the Ramah, Elu ha'arba shois, these 4 hours that were mentioned earlier, lefi inyan hayoyim, umot alech chametz ha'shlishayim. Okay. The question is, how do we calculate hours? I tell you something's the 4th hour, the 5th hour, the 3rd hour. How are these hours calculated in Judaism? So we know there's a good old-fashioned machloikis between the Trumas Hadeshen and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Vilna Gaon. How do we calculate the day? Do we take the day and how do we break it up into hours? Do we break it up starting with Neitz to Shkia or Alois to Tzeis? How do we break up the day? That's where the machloikis comes about all the zmanim. How do you calculate Seiv Zman Kriyashma? Why is there a machloikis? The Mishnah says in Brachas, when Seiv Zman Kriyashma? The question is, how do you break up the day? When's that hour? Do you break up the day, the hours begin from Shkia, from Neitz, or the hours begin from Alois? So here also, you're going to have the same machloikis here also. So here, what are the two tzadim? So let's just speak it out. People call it the Magen Avraham Shita. It's not really the Magen Avraham Shita. The Magen Avraham only weighed in when it came to Kriyashma. When it came to all the other zmanim, the Magen Avraham was like anyone else, brought down the two shitas. It really should be called the Trumas Hadeshen Shita and the Vilna Gaon and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav Shita. But if in all the zmanim and all the shuls, everyone calls it the Magen Avraham, so I just don't want to confuse everyone. But to be fair and honest, it's not the only time it's the Magen Avraham is Kriyashma. That's where the Magen Avraham waited and said, you have to be Machmir and go with the Mochamer to Keshita. But the Magen Avraham never waited in anything else. But we call it the Magen Avraham Shita. So we know the Magen Avraham Shita is earlier, and the Vilna Gaon Shita is later. Says the Mishnah Berurah, so what should we do when it comes to Erev Pesach? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Sivkot and Ches. The Choshev Mes Hayoyim, how do we calculate the day? We calculate the day starting from Alois until Tzeis, which would mean that the Isurim would come earlier. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Kein Kasvu Harbi Achroinim, that's the opinion of many Achroinim. The Yeshayim, no. No, we calculate the day from Neitz to Shkia. That topic would come out of Kula. And that's the Vilna Gaon Shita. So the Vilna Gaon held, we calculate the day starting later, therefore everything is pushed back. That's why the Vilna Gaon's Zman for Kriyashma is later. Because according to him, the day first starts at Neitz, not at Alois HaShachar. So what do we do, says the Mishnah Berurah? Ulechatchila, preferably, toiv lahach mekidei rishayna. You should be machmer like the first opinion. Which is why, if you look at many of the charts for zmanim, they have soiv zman isarachila. At what time? They have it at 10:16. Where did they dream up 10:16? That 10:16 is according to the first shita that calculates from Alois until Tzeisik Echavim. And since the Mishnah Berurah says you're supposed to be machmer, that's why everyone's machmer. But, to be fair and honest, according to the Vilna Gaon, which is the second shita, you're allowed to eat chametz up till 10:40 a.m. Now the obvious question here is why is it when it comes to da'iraisas like Kriyashma, everyone is samech on the Vilna Gaon? And yet when it comes to something like an Isur D'Rabbanan, we're all machmel like the Magen Avraham. seems to be a little strange. The simple answer I have is because this is a one-time event. Once a year, you could be machmer. You expect me every day to get up that much early to say Kriya Shema? So maybe that's why it is that way. But if you look at all the zmanim, they're all going to put down for Seif Zman Achila is 10:16. That's assuming that we're calculating the day like L'chumra, like the Mishnah Berurah said. But there's still one problem. We know better. We know that that's a miscalculated shita. That sheet of counting from Alois is they're using the wrong Alois. They're using Alois at being a set 72 minutes before Nates. We already learned that that's not right. So if you want the real correct Magen Avraham, if you're going to be Machmer, you want to at least be Machmer correctly. So the real correct way would be stopping to eat at 10:10 or 10:11. So even though all the calendars say 10:16, they'll call it the Magen Avraham, it's their version of the Magen Avraham, to which we've often have pointed out is probably not correct. The more correct version would be a few minutes earlier, which is about 10:10. So if you go on My Zmanim, you'll see they'll give you two Zmanim. Or if you buy Rabbi Blumenkranz's book, on the front page of the book, it's a terrific sefer, and there he has the Zmanim. So he lays it out like this as well. He has Isser Achila Magen Avraham, then he has two versions of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham with the 72 minutes, and the Magen Avraham with the degrees. As we mentioned many times, the more correct version is the degrees version, which is, again, another chumrah. Which means if you want to take all the chumrahs, you should stop eating the chametz by 10:10. But b'di'eved, according to the Vilna Gaon, you can eat chametz up till 10:40. That's all with regard to Isser Achilas chametz. What about Isser Hanavis Reifas chametz? So if you go on the web, if you go on the shul, they'll tell you you have to burn the chametz by 11:33. What's 11:33? That's the first shita, the more machmedika shita. But as we mentioned already, that's if they'll have 11:36. That's counting Alois at 72 minutes before Nates. We already debunked that theory, so therefore you should probably burn your chametz by 11:32. But you have the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon holds, you burn your chametz by 11:48. So this is one of those examples where Zmanim are very important, and don't necessarily trust whatever the shul tells you. So they're telling you the Magen Avraham, that's the Magen Avraham of 72 minutes, which perhaps is not necessarily the accepted way of learning the Magen Avraham. So again, we are machmir for the Magen Avraham, but we should try to get the Magen Avraham. If we're going to do it, let's do it right. Let's get the correct version of the Magen Avraham. We're talking about a difference of 5 minutes, nothing too major. Okay, so that's just a Zmanim public announcement for calculating the Surim on Erev Pesach. Moving on to the Seder, I found this year something which I never came across. And I found it brought down by many. I was first brought to this by one of the tshuvas in Minchas Asher. I got this week a gift, the third chelik of Minchas Asher. So when you get a sefer like that, it's one of those things you can't put down. So you just keep on reading. You turn the next page, and lo and behold, he's got tons and tons of shalos and tshuvas about Pesach. Very, very, very befitting. So there I saw something very interesting, which I never saw before, and he piqued my interest, and then I saw many other people say it already. We all know when we come to the Seder, there's many mitzvahs that take place at the Seder. We have the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, mitzvah deraisa. CPU says Mitzrayim, mitzvah deraisa. We have the Yom Tov of Pesach, which is Kedushas Yom Tov. We have Dal Kaisis, mitzvah derabonon. We make a Shechiyonu at the beginning of the Yom Tov, at the Kiddush. Is that Shechiyonu supposed to go on all the mitzvahs as well? Or that Shechiyonu is just specifically for the Kiddush? Where else do we find such a Shaila? We know by Purim. We spoke about this by Purim. When you make the Shechiyonu on the Purim day, on the Megillah, Mefarshim point out that you're supposed to have in mind for all the other mitzvahs ayim. So should you have that same mindset at the Seder? That when you're going to make the Kiddush and you're going to say Shechiyonu, should you have in mind that this Shechiyonu is not just going on the Kiddush, it's going on the Dal Kaisis, it's going on the Matzah, it's going on the Maror, it's going on the CBTS Mitzrayim? So I found it in Rabbi Asher Weiss, he writes this, and I found it in Nitta Gavriel, I found it in many Achreidim, the original source they attributed to Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So I wrote it down over here in the Nitta Gavriel, he writes it number 3. He writes, Kishimavarach Shechiyonu, when you make Shechiyonu at the Seder, Yechavon lifter gamas achilas matzah, umarah v'arba kaisis, v'chol mitzvah salayla. A new thing, I never came across this. When you make the Shechiyonu at Kiddush, you should have in mind that this Shechiyonu is going on all the mitzvahs halayla. What Rabbi Asher Weiss time is in his sefer is he takes out Marah. He thinks Marah doesn't get a Shechiyonu. It's not that type of a mitzvah. The other mitzvahs that are exciting mitzvahs, happy mitzvahs, that you make a Shechiyonu on. But the type of bracha Shechiyonu on the Marah, who wants to remember bitter times? We'd rather not have to worry about the bitter times. Right? Okay, that's the shayla we talked about often with Sfiras HaOmer. Why there's no Shachriyanu? So that's his addition. Rabbi Asher Weiss thinks take out Mar, but everything else you have to have Shachriyanu for. So that's an interesting halacha l'maisa. This year, when you come to the Seder and you make the Shachriyanu, or for that matter, where the women make the Shachriyanu when they're like candles, we've spoken about that in the past, you should have in mind that the Shachriyanu is not just going on the Yom Tov, it's not just for Kiddush, it's on all the mitzvahs you're going to do tonight, which you haven't done in a full year. You want to have the Shachriyanu in mind for that as well.
Why do we not say
that's a great question. The Rishonim have this kasha. Why is there no Shachriyanu on the Bir Chametz? So the Rosh has this kasha and the Ran has this kasha. And one of the terutzim that they give is because it's not a very exciting mitzvah. Right, what are the words? Shachriyanu, thank you Hashem for allowing me to empty my cupboards and spend a lot of money. I'd rather not. I'd rather get to keep my pasta and my bagels. That's one of the terutzim. The other terutz they give is the Rosh has this kasha. He says maybe the Shachriyanu on the Yom Tov calls on that also. But the Rishonim all have this kasha. Right? That's right. That's right. The Rishonim have this kasha. The other mitzvah that we're going to have in a few days is Sfiras HaOmer also has no Shachriyanu. That's the other mitzvah that has no Shachriyanu. That the Baal HaMoreh in the end of Pesachim asks, why is there no Shachriyanu on the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? So there are, every once in a while, you'll come across a mitzvah here and there that there is no Shachriyanu, and usually the question is, why is there no Shachriyanu? Let's go a little out of order for a second before we get to the Shurim. If any of you have ever been curious what your wife makes for Shulchan Aruch, what is exactly is people eat for Shulchan Aruch? So there's an interesting halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch number 4. The reason why I'm putting this down is because many people have been asking about this shayla, so it's worth speaking about. Shulchan Aruch writes the following: Makim shenogu lechel tzli b'leil psachim. This is based on the Mishnah in the 4th parak of Psachim. A place where there was accustomed to eat roasted on the leil Pesach, oichlim, you're allowed to eat. Makim shenogu shloi lechel ein oichlim. There was a minug that you should not eat anything roasted on leil Pesach. Why? We don't want anyone thinking that we're actually bringing Korban Pesach today. Hopefully we should be Zeicher this year, but right now it looks like we're not. So we don't want anyone thinking, because the Korban Pesach was unique, it was Nechal Tzaldi, it was roasted. So there was a minug not to eat anything roasted. So therefore, there was a minug, which today we assume all our places are like that. We don't eat anything roasted. So therefore at the Seder, you're not supposed to eat anything roasted. So what are you supposed to eat for Shulchan Aruch? If you're not eating anything roasted, so it has to be cooked in some version. This is the big shayla that many people ask. So can the big shayla everyone ask, are you allowed to have a pot roast for Shulchan Aruch? What's a pot roast? You put it in the oven, and it cooks in the oven. What's the oven considered? Is the oven roasted, or is the oven baking? If you were to boil something, that's why, how many people have boiled chicken for Shulchan Aruch? You ever wondered why that's the standard dish? It's because it's boiled. It's cooked in a lot of water. When it's cooked in water, it's not roasted. Roasted has no water. Right, you go to a barbecue, there's no water on the grill. You go to a shawarma, there's no water, it's all fire. So when you cook something with water, that's why you kasher with water versus heat, because it's water. So boiled chicken is chicken made with a lot of water. That's why many people have boiled chicken. But the question is, let's say for example, you take a pot roast, you stick it into the oven. Would that be considered boiled, or would that be considered roasted?
So it's
So we're going to see that the way out of all this is just to add a little bit of water, and if it changes it from being roasted to being cooked instead of roasted.
So, all food or just meat?
Very good. We'll get to the second. Yeah, well, it's just meat. It's just anything that's shechted. I had a lady call me up frantic. She wants to make potato kugel, but she's going to bake it in the oven. What's she going to do? The answer is that's okay, because the only thing you're not allowed to eat roasted is something that's shechted. Even fish you can have. If you want to barbecue fish, you can have that for Shulchan Aruch. Just you can't grill. You can grill fish, but you can't grill chicken.
Chicken
you can. Well, the Shulchan Aruch says you can't.
It falls within these issues.
Right. Chicken, no, but fish, yes. What else is roasted that we have on the Seder plate? The egg. The beitza itself, people eat it. It's roasted. The answer is eggs are okay. We'll see in a second, Mishnah Berurah says. So Dr. Mishnah Berurah number 5. Ube'elu arotzos einoigim lechot tzoldi b'shnei halelus. We're very from today, we don't eat roasted both nights. Va'afilu tzli kader. Even if it's a tzli kader, pirish and nitzla b'kadeira. You put it in a pot in the oven. Baloi mayim, b'shamashka. There's no water and there's no liquid. El mitavsha b'mu'al ayetzvimenu. It's cooking its own juices. Says Mishnah Berurah, asr. Ava b'shein adoyim l'tzlis ha-pesach. That would not work for the current Pesach. You couldn't cook the current Pesach in your oven. Sha-pesach sh'nitzla b'kadeira apostle. The carbon pesach will be possible. Afilu hachi yesh la'aser b'bnei maris ayin. It's a maris ayin issue. So therefore, says the Mishnah Berurah, takes the more chomedic approach, that taking a chicken, a pot roast, and sticking it into the oven, that would be considered tzli, it would be asr. Comes along the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan disagrees. He writes, v'tzli kader v'hayinu l'hasim habas b'kdeir b'loy mayim nearly demutter. Says Aruch Shulchan, that's no problem. Given the Pesach pasul b'chiyah gavna, if you were to do that for the Karban Pesach, that would make the Karban Pesach pasul. Av sheish pluk tusham, even though it's a machloikis, echzu linya malkis, if it's negate to malkis, avu kuliyam ha-pesach pasul, dein etzliyesh, nothing to talk about. For some reason, this machloikis mishtabur Aruch Shulchan, all the paiskim go l'chumra. All the, you look at all the websites, the OU, Star K, they all go, no, we're machmet today, we won't cook a pot roast in the oven plain. Because that would look, again, looks like roasted.
But that's why he's tining, though, that it's not in
the Right. He's tining that. If you did this with the Karban Pesach, it would possible the Karban Pesach. The answer is, yeah, but not everyone knows that. People see, think, they make, it's a gzera. It's a made-up gzera. So we have machloikas achreinim, how far to take the gzera. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, if you wanted to make a pot roast in the oven, you have a problem. According to Aruch HaShulchan, you can make a pot roast. So what's the way around all of this? So the easy way around all this is what Reb Shmuel Vosner writes. Reb Shmuel Vosner writes, Hine, Avopi number 7, Hine, Avopi Shanachtu B'nei Ashkenaz, Heimim Koyim She'asu Lechotzli, we Ashkenazic Jews come from a place that has a minig not to eat it, K'mavor B'poiskim, B'komokim K'otzim Achzik Brocha, B'shar Tshuvit, Choshi Yesh Merik, to some form of a liquid. V'afilu Nitztamek Achach, even if it cooks out, it dries up. That's not called roasted. Meaning, very often you start off with a liquid, and by the time it's done cooking, the liquid dries out. Says Mr. Shmuel Vaz, if you put water in it, then gam im nikra gebefi amoin mikomakim kedai lemais lais basias mayim alarogel kdeishi nikra merik mamish. Says the Shulvaz, you should try to put a little bit more than normal water. Add more than just the regular. Make it very clear that the dish is cooking in its water. How much water do you have to put in? So the Star K quotes from Moshe Heinemann, he thinks a quarter of an inch or more of water already makes it cooked and no longer roasted. So if you want to make a pot roast, if you want to make chicken, so you just have to add, according to Moshe Heinemann, you have to add a quarter inch or more of water, fixes the whole problem. Rabbi Belsky is quoting is you need to have 2 to 3 inches of water in the dish to make it no longer roasted. So it's something to ask your wives exactly what they make for Shulchan Aruch, and you understand what they're dealing with. They're very limited to what they can make, because they're not allowed to make anything in a regular fire. You can't make anything, you can't just take, a piece of chicken and put it in the oven. You have to make sure there's significant liquid, or you're going to boil it on the fire.
You can't bake it.
According to the Mishnah Berurah, you can't bake it. No. According to the Mishnah Berurah, you can. According to Aruch HaShulchan, you could. So Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, I think, has perhaps the most lenient approach. He writes number 8. He says, V'nechleku achreinim b'din sli kader. There's machlokes achreinim about cooking in a pot. If you look at this, you say, this is not roasted. This is baked. And no one's going to put, let's say schnitzel, put it in the oven and say, oh, I just roasted schnitzel. That's not roasted. That's baked. So he thinks that's mutter. That's a very big kula. So if it's significant liquid, it would also be mutter. That's the other way. Then he writes at the bottom, this Rabbi Kleinman, who wrote the Sefer, quotes from Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, that's if there's no water. He says you put even a little bit of water. Again, according to Rabbi Belsky, you have to put 2 to 3 inches of water. According to Maisha Hayman, a quarter inch of water. According to Reb Shmuel Vazder, a little bit more. Says Reb Shmuel, no, a little bit of water. A little bit of water. Again, I'm not familiar with making pot roast, but you tell me there's no water, that you just stick the roast on the thing and put it in. I don't know. According to this, as long as there's any amount of water in it, it bypasses the problem. So that's what he writes over here. As long as there's a little bit of water, again, it makes sense. Because let's discuss what is, by definition, roasted is without water. So the moment there's water there, it no longer gives off the impression of being roasted. So I definitely hear where he's coming from, but not everyone agrees to his get there. So it's definitely a dispute amongst the contemporary achronim. How much water does one need to put in to take it away from being roasted, to put it into the family of cooking, to which would not be a problem? What is under the banner? So if you look in number 9, Shulchan Aruch is very clearly, afilu besar egel v'oif, even if you want to have chicken, the Karban Pesach did not come from a chicken. That's for sure. So what's the problem if I want to have chicken? Kol dovish shiton shchita. Any animal that needs shchita, also lechotzli. You're not allowed to eat roasted. That's the gedder. That's the cutoff. Even though, again, the Karban Pesach only came from one specific animal. You couldn't bring the Karban Pesach from any animal you wanted. Nonetheless, you know, let's say, for example, you want to have certain types of meat. Steak. Karban Pesach, the Karban Pesach wasn't allowed to come from deer. Let's say you want to have these types of creative meat. That the Karm Pesach couldn't come from a chicken. The Karm Pesach was not allowed to come from a chicken. So why can't I eat chicken? It's a loy plug. So therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, chicken is out as well. Says the Mishnah Berurah.
Does the Shulchan Aruch have a makor for the original saka of not roasting?
That's the Mishnah. That was a minhag. It comes from the Mishnah. Yeah, that comes from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah Berurah says, so what's not under this iser? Lafuke, to exclude dogim ubeitzim, eggs and fish. That's no problem. So if you wanted to grill salmon on the grill, that you can have at Shulchan Aruch. But if you're going to do the same thing with a piece of chicken, you're going to be a problem. No one's going to make a mistake. Even the egg on the ka'ara that's roasted, you can eat that as well if you choose to do so. So, right, so you got to figure out a way to make it. So now it's much harder for the Jewish women to figure out what they're supposed to make for Shulchan Aruch. But that's why I think a lot of people have boiled chicken. There's, again, not necessarily the most of taste, but it fulfills this obligation. It's cooked in a significant amount of water. But again, so someone asked me, so what do they do in the hotels? That's a good question. I don't know what they serve in the hotels, but they're not serving boiled chicken. For what you're paying, you're getting more than just boiled chicken. So they must come up with one of these various heterim. Maybe they're serving Chandar HaShulchan. I'm not sure how they get around it. Let's just talk a little bit. In past years, we spoke more about it. I just want to talk about it for 2 seconds and we'll really move on. Let's just talk about the wine that we use when we go to the Seder. This is the time where we're all going to the wine store. If you haven't yet gone to the wine store, it reminds me that I need to go to the wine store to buy wine for the Dal Kaisis. So you're really looking for three things when you go to the wine store. The first thing you want to look is preferably that the wine is not mevushel. Again, we've spoken many times that this machloikis reshaynim, if mevushel ruins the shem yayin, if it's megareya, it subtracts from the shem yayin, to the point where maybe you can't even make a hagofen, or to the point where it takes away the iser yayin nesach if moved or touched by a guy. So this machloikis reshaynim, does it ruin the shem yayin? So again, Shulchan Aruch writes two shittas in Hilchos Kiddush, but for Dal Kaisis he writes mefurish, you could use yayin mevushel, but the Mishnah Berurah writes, it's better not to use yayin mevushel. However, if you are having non-religious people at your Seder, or you're going to have non-Jewish religious help throughout Pesach, then it's better to buy the mevushel wine. It's not worth the headache. So, if you're going to have no one, if it's just going to be you and your family, then go with the non-mevushel. It's better. Also, the perk is the non-mevushel, they come in the bigger bottles. The mevushel is the small bottle, so you got to buy more small bottles. At least in Kedem's line, I don't know if all the lines it works like that.
Some of the stuff from Eretz Yisrael, you got to be careful. The small bottles, sometimes they're not mevushel. You have to look.
I know in the Kedem it's like that. I think all Kedem's line, the mevushel is all skinny bottles are mevushel. So again, if all bets are equal and it's just going to be regular religious Jews at your Seder, you're not having a cleaning lady come for another week, she's off for the week, so then it's probably better to buy non-mevushel. But if you're going to have cleaning help, or you have aides in the house, or whatever cheshbonos you have, zavadi, you should use mevushel. That's thing number one.
When is the isser, if the guy, the cleaning lady touches it,
that's,
when is it hot? So it's in the refrigerator. It's totally closed.
So that's fine.
She's getting it. No, it's been opened already.
Oh, yeah.
Over, and now it's totally closed. She's moving it.
So that depends. That depends. That's some yes, some no. Depends who you ask. Yeah, yeah. Not everyone, right? Many hold that's not a problem. But the problem is, it's usually when it's poured. So at the Seder, you're going to. Right. So as long as she's not pouring. Right. The question is, do we have a chash that she poured it when we're not watching? It's a shayla. Presumably not. But at the Seder, it's a problem. If you're having non-religious, we spoke about this a while ago. What's the din of a mummer with regard to Yayim Mevushel? We mentioned there's a steer in Chuvas from Rav Moshe about it. So that Paiskim suggests it's perhaps better. The next thing you want, it should preferably be red. We like the color red, even though the red wine got us in trouble a lot throughout history. Blood libels is not a new thing. Even in America, in the 1900s, there was a blood libel, I think it was 1925, where a Christian kid went missing shortly before Pesach, and they brought in the rabbi in New York. They brought in the rabbi for investigative purposes to find out how exactly they make the matzah and how they make the wine. This is an old issue that we have. The Chag Yaakov talks about it. He lived through it, where they used to use blood libels about the blood we use, even though we all know that's not the way they make wine. But Lamaisa, we use red wine. And the third thing that I want to talk about is the alcohol content. Right? I've heard from a couple of people, they drink more Lil Pesach than they drink on Purim. So for many people, that's true. But it's much more difficult to continue a Seder when you had 3 cups or 2 cups of very high, strong wine. So my suggestion would be is don't buy such strong alcohol content. But you'll tell me, I'm not Yotze like that. So we mentioned in the past, there's a very big machlokes achronim, can you use grape juice for Dal Kaisis? Rav Moshe wrote his very famous tshuva. Rav Moshe said, you're absolutely not Yotze, you need to have alcohol. Again, I'll refer back to it a lot tonight. Rabbi Shweiss and his tshuva respectfully disagrees with Rav Moshe, and he thinks you are yaitza with grape juice. Many achreinim, almost all the achreinim hold, b'di'evit, you can't drink wine, you have an alcohol issue, you have other medical reasons, you should drink grape juice. But what I think the better is buy a very low alcohol level wine. So you'll tell me it doesn't count. It doesn't count. It does count. How do I know it counts? I'll prove it to you from a tshuva from Rabbi Belsky. Rabbi Belsky, besides being a gadol b'Torah, he knew science and he knew these types of things as well. So he writes a tshuva in the Sefer Shulchan Alevi, where he writes the following. He says, we all know it's brought down in the Gemara, it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. They used to dilute the wine. Now today, if you dilute the kedem wine, you're going to run yourself into trouble. If you take a 6% kedem wine and you start mixing it, it's a shaila what the bracha is going to be. So Rabbi Belsky points out the following observation. He writes at number 11. Vine has karnu shiyain mazug, diluted wine, hu chelik aleph yain, was one part wine, the gimel chalak yamayim, and three parts water. So now he gives us a mathematical. This is the easy math for tonight. Vim ayi b'yayin 40% alcohol, says Rabbi Belsky, let's be honest, the alcohol in the times of the Gemara wasn't 800% more alcohol than it is today. It was the same as we had. So
you can't produce wine more than 14%.
The average wine is not more. He says you could tamper now with chemicals, I think they say you can do it. But your average bottle, in the times of the Gemara, the average alcohol was 14%. Says Dr. Babelski, one second. If you're starting at a 14% and you're diluting it at a 1-3 ratio, so how much alcohol content was your wine when it was all over? Dr. Babelski, Haril Achamazi, you get 3.5. That's what we call today kal. That's kedem kal, right? Dr. Babelski, Vimkin, Yain Shaboy, 3.5 alcohol, who Oise Yain, Shahi Bimei Chazal. You're drinking the same wine that they drink in the times of the Gemara. Alcohol ain't some pickbook behind kazet. Says Rabbi Belsky, do not have any problem with 3.5. That's why I think kedem kal, I think, might be 3%. But Rabbi Belsky holds 3.5 is mamish. If you can buy 4% or 5%, that's so much better. People are drinking 9%, 12%. Of course you're not going to make it through the Seder like that. You're drinking so much wine. And then you're on top of that, you're going to be machmir to drink the whole kais. And your becher is 82 ounces. So yeah, of course you're not going to make it through the Seder. No surprise. So I think this is something I think is kedai to focus on. We should buy alcohol that has a much lower. Again, this way you're going to all sheet. Even if you want to disagree with Rav Moshe and hold, maybe even if you want to be machmir for Rav Moshe, you need wine. This is wine. Rav Moshe didn't say the wine has to be that you get shikr. It has to have, there's no question 4% wine is alcohol. It is alcohol. It might not have, it's not the same as grape juice. So I grab a sword there behind him and writes, you need 4%. He doesn't explain why, but he thinks that it has to be at least 4%. So we have Machlokes, Rabbi Belsky says 3.5, Rabbi Heinemann says 4. But again, if you're buying 5, you're for sure fine. You want to buy 5, I don't think there's 3 and, there's 5 and 7, 5.5 to have. So I would suggest buy that. You'll have a much more pleasurable Seder when you're actually with the rest of the crowd for the Seder, because you haven't had 12. Someone showed me a 14%. Who's going to drink 14% at the Seder? And you expect to be awake for the whole Seder? It's not practical. Yeah, on an empty stomach, and then you have to... It doesn't make sense to me. So I would suggest, and that's what I'm trying, myself plan on doing, is using something in the lower, something around 5. If for sure your Yotze all sheets should probably be the best type of wine, I think, to get for the Seder. Okay, now we're already talking about the Seder. This was really more like shopping questions. So now let's talk about the Seder. Very often at the Seder, the women feel like they're not obligated. And therefore, they kind of try to get around what their obligation is. So if you look at source number 4 and number 13, I skipped 12 for a second. But what I want with 12 is that the Shulchan Aruch writes that when you make Kiddush, you should have in mind that you want to do all the mitzvahs. You want to do the mitzvah of Kiddush and the mitzvah of Dalet Kaisis. Because again, the first cup of the Dalet Kaisis is Kiddush. So you have to have in mind that you want to be yotze the mitzvah of Kiddush and the mitzvah of Kais Rishayna Shel Dalet Kaisis. This year it's even more tricky because the first Kais is the Eraisa because it's Kiddush. Every other year, the Dalet Kaisis is only the Rabbanon. This year, the first Kais, the first night, is going to be the Eraisa because of Kiddush. So let's get straight who has to do what. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Gam hanoshim chayeves ba'arba kaisis u'b'chol mitzvahs anheges ba'is alayla. Women are like men when it comes to Lel Seder. They have all the obligations. There's no option for her to decide, you know what, I drank one cup, I had enough, I'm going to the couch, I'm going to sleep, I worked hard, and she probably did, but she still has to go through the procedures as much as the men have to do. She has to drink dal kaisis, she has to drink eat the matzah, we'll see what else. I mentioned this in the past, but Basha Weiss has another interesting idea. He suggests that although women don't lean, he writes, but if a lady drinks the dal kaisis on the go, like she's standing and holding a couple of kids and trying to serve a course, he thinks you're not yaitza. He thinks that's b'chlan on chavers. Even if Elisha doesn't have to be masiv, because we're saying under Rav Yoh, he said, but it has to at least be chavers. It has to be some form of some form of relaxation. If she's standing or if she's rushing on the go, busy, so it's something you should tell your wives, your daughters, whoever else is going to be at your seder, that they should try to sit at least for the dal kaisis, try to sit, have some downtime, enjoy. The other problem is you don't want them sipping their wine this is their time to relax. So they sip slowly the wine. That's another problem. We'll see how quickly you have to drink the dal kaisis as well. But that's an interesting observation from Rav Asher Weiss, where he points out that even though they don't have to leave, they still have to have at least some form of chavrus. So what mitzvahs do women have a leil Pesach? The Mishnah Berurah writes number 14. They have to do what? They have to have matzah, moror, and haggadah. Right? They have to go through the haggadah, they have to eat matzah, and he writes over here, they also have to eat moror. He doesn't write afikoman. But the Mishnah Berurah later on writes they do have to eat afikoman. So they do have to afikoman as well. So the mamash have the same mitzvahs as the men do. They have to drink the dal kaisis. The Berhalacha points out that they have to drink the dal kaisis kiseder. They can't skip around. They can't jump around. They can't decide to do the third cup and the first cup and the first cup. It's got to be kiseder. People have this thing that they tell their wives, oh, you don't have to drink as much. You don't have to eat as much. Maybe, maybe not. But the pashtus is that they should at least drink, at least what's, meaning you can't tell your wife she just has to take a sip of the dal kaisis. That's not true. That's not yaitz according to any shittas. Maybe she can use a more makel de kashita because she's only derabonon, because she's afheim boy sanes, it's only derabonon, maybe. But to say that they don't have to do it properly, that's not true. They have to say it. So they have to make sure they drink the kaisis, they eat the marr. And people tell them, okay, you can skip marr. No, you can't skip marr. Maybe you don't have to take the horseradish, but you gotta have marr, you gotta have something. So this is a notion that often finds its way to the Jewish home. It's not really correct. So the real topic, this was just a hagdam. The real topic tonight was we wanted to get into the shiurim. How much do you need to have for each of the different parts of the Seder? So we'll start with the dal kaisis. Shulchan Aruch writes in number 16, shir ha-kais, how big is your cup supposed to be? That's question number one. How big is your cup supposed to be? So the answer is revius. Your cup is supposed to hold a revius. Okay, how big is a revius? So how do we figure out what a revius is? So the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuvtes, and this is where the math comes in, Rabbi Yisai, the Gemara in Pesachim says that how big is a revius? Zok the Gemara, Misha'arin revius shal Pesach, Amrev Chizdo, revius shal Torah, etzboim ala etzboim, it's two thumbs by two thumbs, beroim etzboim, vechatzi etzba vechoymish etzba. Two thumbs by two thumbs by two thumbs, and 0.7. What is that in English? What is that in English? We don't know. So the Rashbam writes in Psachim on the next Amid. The Rashbam says, what is all this? What are all these numbers? Says Rashbam, it's the equivalent of an egg and a half. Okay? So you take an egg, and you dip it in water, see how much volume it takes up. So an egg and a half of volume equals this description of the Gemara. Fine. So that should be easy enough to figure out. There's only one problem. If you look in the Tzlach, this is one of the famous Tzlachs from the great Noidi Behuda. The Noidi Behuda writes in Psachim, it's a beautiful the way he writes it, number 20, he says, "For hoyel v'chaviv v'mitzvah b'shaitai, because I love doing the mitzvahs when I'm supposed to, u'b'layla zu tzrichon l'echol kazayis matzah," right, the one time of the year where you really need to know your kazayis, right, a kazayis is supposedly a half of a beah. So you gotta know how much a kebeah is to know how much a kazayis is, right? So how much is a kebeah? So we know. Magen Avraham says that an egg and a half equals a revius, so we use eggs. So you take an egg and you measure it. So he says that I have one problem. He says, I thought that an egg and a half is the same shear as the Gemara's description. He says, but it's not. I measured it and it doesn't work out. So the Rabbi Yehuda says, I have two choices. Either our thumbs, the Gemara says an etzba means the thumb. So either our thumbs shrunk from the times of the Gemara, or perhaps our eggs shrunk from the times of the Gemara. So this is where the Noid Behuda comes up with his famous chiddush, that the eggs in the times of the Gemara, when does a revius equal an egg and a half? That was the old eggs. Our eggs are very different. Our eggs are significantly smaller. Therefore, says the Noid Behuda, our eggs are doubled. If you want to get a revius is three of our eggs. Changes the whole discussion. So if you accept the notion of the Noid Behuda, where does that leave us today? It leaves us with the notion that a revius is not merely the volume of an egg and a half, but it's the volume of three eggs. It's double the original shear. So here's where the math comes in. How much volume does a egg take up today? So Shmuel Kamenetsky tested it out, and he used what we call today a large egg. Eggs come in many different types of eggs. So Shmuel Kamenetsky took an egg, and he found that your average egg takes up 1.87 ounces of volume. Okay, so now we can figure this out very simply. So if you accept the Noi Debi Huda, so you got to go 1.87 times 3. Because according to the Yehuda, Revius is not the equal to the eggs of today. It's equal to 3 times the eggs of today. So according to that, it should come out. So what's going to be the size of Revius if you take 1.87 times 3? So Shul Kamenetsky and Reb Heinemann wrote, they make it to go to 1.9 to make the math easier. So what's 1.9 times 3? 5.7. So according to this, Revius is almost close to 6 ounces. How do you get to that? Because you hold like the tzlach. You hold that you have to take an egg, but the egg is not the egg of the Gemara, which was an egg and a half. It's doubled. It's 3 eggs. So you take you take an egg, see how much volume, which is 1.9, and you times it by 3. It takes you to 5.7. Why is there a shita that's much less than that? Because if you disagree with the tzlach, and you hold that our eggs are the same eggs as the times of the Gemara, so you take 1.9 and you times it by 1.5. That takes you to 2.9. That's why there's a sheet out there called 2.9 revius. 2.9 ounces is a revius. Because that's the learning simple reading of the Magen Avraham and the Paiskim, that a revius is measured by an egg and a half. Then there's the middle sheet. The middle sheet is the Ber Halacha. The Ber Halacha thinks that I agree with the Noi Di Behuda that the egg shrunk, but not as extreme as the Noi Di Behuda. He thinks we have to be Meshire it. Instead of an egg and a half, it's 2 eggs. So then you take the same math. You take 1.9 times it by 2, it takes you to about 3.8. 3.7, round out to 3.8. That's the basic makar for the three mathematics of 3.8. Those are the three shitas of how it works. It's taking the volume of an egg, figuring out how much volume takes up, and then plugging into all the different shitas. If you accept the Noi Di Behuda that it's 3 eggs, if you assume not like the Noi Di Behuda that it's 1.5 eggs, or you assume like the Ber Halacha that it's 2 eggs, that's where it comes from. But I found even a more makel de kashita amongst the Hungarian paiskim. If you look at the Nitta Gavriel brings down from the Hungarian Paiskim that he quotes from the Shinova. The Shinova was a son of the Divrei Chaim, from the Sansa dynasty. So he writes over here, Shir Revius, Yeshayim Shu 75 grams. That a Revius is 75 grams. How much is 75 grams? So today we could do this easily in the internet. 75 grams is, actually, if you Google it, it's 2.646 ounces. He writes over here, Shushte ounce umechza, it's 2.5 ounces. That's not exactly correct mathematically, but it's ballpark. That's very little. That's the most mekel de gashita. It's about 2.7 for a revius. And your becher is teeny. This is your becher for dal kaisis. You can have a becher of 3 ounces, according to him, your yaitza. That's very, very mekel. Yes. Yeah, every kais has to be filled to the top. Anytime you have a... Every kashal bracha needs to go to the top. The question with dal kais is, do you have to drink all of it? But it's got to be filled to the top for sure. No question. So if you go with the more, I urge people on Pesach, get a smaller becher. The smaller becher, if you have to drink roiv kais, it's much less. So again, in this world, if you can take a becher that's 2.7 and you drink roiv kais, how much are you drinking? An ounce and
it's dal kais after the besides, no?
No, it's roiv kais of the 2.7. What's roiv of 2.7? It's an ounce and it's very little. It's nothing. Very little. So again, most of us don't assume like this 2.7 shita. The gamut is anywhere between the numbers we mentioned. Between 2.9 and 5.7. The briskers hold after 6 ounces. The brisker Rav held that the revius is 6 ounces. So halacha l'maaseh, this year it gets a little tricky. Because since this year, it's a deraisa. When it comes to deraisas, people are very machmir. They don't want to take a chance. Maybe the Noi Di Behuda is right. How can you take a chance on something like a deraisa? So for the other cases, you can probably get away with using the derabonah. Using the derabonah means you keep the eggs the way they are, which means you only need a size of 2.9 ounces. It's very, very little. But because the first case this year is going to be kaisel kiddush is deraisa, so many paiskim suggest you should try to be machmir. So they say b'shem Rav Moshe held letzad chumra 4.42 ounces, a little over 4 ounces according to Rav Moshe is good. Your average becher that you buy in the Svarim store is going to be over 5 ounces, if I'm not mistaken. I once asked one of the Svarim stores this question. Many years ago, when I had a lot of extra time, I spent the days before Pesach testing out all the bechers in the house, seeing how big they were. Now I don't have the time to even tevel the bechers that I'm supposed to tevel, let alone fill them up. But I asked the guy in the store, he told me most of the bechers that we sell today are all over 5 ounces. If you buy a becher somewhere else, sometimes you'll get a mitzvah from a grandparent or an old becher, you'll see that they're very small. In Europe, the bechers were teeny. Europe, they had very little money and they had very little wine, and therefore the bechers were much smaller. That's what they say over. Someone told me that he saw from Reb Moshe Salavechik's becher, that he saw Reb Moshe Salavechik's becher, and he says it was mamshtin. Very, very small. So again, today the briskas are using 6 ounces for revis. That wouldn't work with this version, but halacha lemaisa, it's anywhere between, we'll call it anywhere between 2.7 and over 6 ounces, which is pretty amazing. So I think it should be somewhere in between. Somewhere in between, it sounds about right. The Chazanish was very machmir. Reb Chaim Noer, who was the poistik in Yerushalayim before the Chazanish came to Eretz Yisrael, he held a more mekel shita. He thought, he measured it with grams. So he thought it goes with grams. He thought revius is 86 grams. And he had a cute vart. He says the word kois is begematria 86. So the Chazanish rebuttal was, yeah, but it's supposed to be kois hagun, which is 150. So he thought that's 150 grams. So then you got to plug it in. How much is grams in ounces? So 86 grams turns out to be 3.034 ounces. 75 grams turns out to be 2.646 ounces. So you just have to figure it out.
The shear is on the size of a cup, not on how much wine you have to drink.
So there's two questions. This first question is, if you have to drink, how big your cup has to be? And some people hold you're supposed to either drink Rav Revius or Rav Kais. So you got to know how much Revius is to figure out how much you're supposed to drink. So it's important to know. So if you're taking a Becha, that's only 4 ounces. So if you're going to drink Rav Kais and Rav Revius, it's going to be come out the same thing. So you'll drink a little over 2 ounces. You won't get too drunk if you drink of two. You're drinking 2.5 ounces of 4% wine. I think you should be able to make it for the Seder. I think you should be okay afterwards.
If the first cup is the Raisa,
so then you should have a... Yeah, even then.
But then we have Mali Lugmav for...
So that's Mali Lugmav is for regular Mali Lugmav. We usually use Mali Lugmav, right. How much is Mali Lugmav? So Mali Lugmav, they assume, is about an ounce. It's not so much either. It's about an ounce. It should really be depending on the person, Mali Lugmav. Just to wrap it up, Reb Henkin held that it's 87 grams. How much is 87 grams? It's also about 3 ounces. That was Reb Henkin's shita for revius. So again, it varies. I don't think you have to have a becher of 12 ounces. I think that's too much because there's different shitas of how much you're supposed to drink. So you think you're supposed to try to drink Reb Revius or Reb Kais, Reb Revius, but if you drink, even if you drink a revius, revius is not so much. It's not 4 ounces. It's not terrible. How much time do you have to drink the kais? So, you're supposed to drink it within kedesh shtiyas. You're supposed to drink it lechatchila, the time it takes kedesh shtiyas, kedesh yishte. Right? You're supposed to drink it in the amount of time it takes to drink a revius. How long is that? So it varies anywhere between 30 seconds and a minute. You're really not supposed to sip your wine. You're supposed to really drink it pretty fast. So you really should lechatchila get the amount done between 30 seconds and a minute. But b'di'evit you have kedei achilas pras. How long is kedei achilas pras? So it also varies between 2 minutes and 9 minutes. So many, the stipler I think says it's 3 minutes. 4 minutes. The Machesh is held, it was 3.6 minutes. It's a varies opinions. So it shouldn't take you more than 3-4 minutes. That would be the best. So again, very often the women, this is like their one time to sit. So they sit there, they sip their cup slowly, they take their time. It's very nice that they're drinking dal kaisis, but they might not be eating it. They should try to drink it as fast as they possibly can. How much matzah do you have to eat? How much matzah do you have to eat? So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, they have to eat a kazayis of matzah. How much is a kazayis? So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, a kazayis is half of a kebeya. Okay? How big is a kebeya? So you got to work through all the math again to figure out how much is a kebeya. So for a very practical mathematics, most of the contemporary Paskim suggest your average hand matzah is either going to be a half or a third is going to be a kazayis. Many Achredim wrote a half. That was the standard they used to use. A half of a regular machine, a hand-baked matzah is going to be a kazayis l'chol hashitas. But Moshe Heinemann thinks it's not true. He thinks it's really a third. So if you're eating a half, you get to according to all shitas. If you want to have the most machmir shita, the kazayis, so if you hold, you need to eat 2 kazayisims, you need to eat a whole matzah, right? So when do you need to have 2 kazayisim? So that's a shayla for mitzi matzah. And the Mishnah Berurah writes you should have 2 kazayisim for afikamen also. So even though afikamen is a drabonon. So in theory, since afikamen is only drabonon, so you can use the more makel the gashita. So technically for afikamen, you should get away with using 1/4 of a hand matzah. Because we drop it down a half. It could be mekel. You can half the noid bihuda. Half the noid bihuda, instead of being a half matzah, is a quarter of a matzah. But the Mishnah Berurah says you're supposed to eat 2 kazayisim for afikamen. So you got to go back up to half a matzah anyways, because you have to double that. So it takes you back to having half a matzah. Let's say for kairach. So for kairach, you can only use, you don't have to use so much. What about maror? Maror is a drabonon. So for drabonon, you can be more mekel. So if you're going to use the horseradish, the paiskim suggest it's supposed to be an ounce. If you're going to use the stalks, so Rabbi Heinemann writes, 1 large lettuce leaf or 2 large stalks equals a kazayis. And the 2 could be mitzdarif. If you're going to take some of that and some of that, you could be mistarved the two shitas. So that l'chayra would help as well. So again, so for the things that are the rabbanon, you could be mekel. You can be mishayri at a much less. So let's say, for example, on the second cup, you can only drink. You only need to do 2.9 ounces. Because the second cup is the rabbanon. You can be samech that it's only one egg. It's an egg and a half at 1.9 times 1.5. It's 2.9. You can use 2.9. But for the first case, you have to be machmer. So let's say for the mara, you can be mekel. But for mitzi matzah, we try to have two kezesim. So for mitzi matzah, if you want to be yitzim mitzi matzah, l'chol hashitas, you should probably eat about a full matzah. It's a lot to take. One last thing over here. The stipler had a very mechudish dikashita that, ironically enough, that the chazinish was more mekel with matzah than he was for dalakaisis. Supposedly, the stipler held that you only need to have for... The stipler held that you can get away with a quarter of a matzah. A quarter of a matzah would also constitute a kezais. So we have a quarter, a third, and a half. So somewhere along those lines. I think the way the Paiskim say today is that a half you get to all shittas, the most chumer dika shittas. That's for one kezais, right? So if mitzi matzah, we were noy to have two, so you got to double it. So for afi koymin, and technically, if you just want to have one kezais, so you only need a quarter, even less. So that's all for that. One last thing. Again, a lot of this we didn't get to see inside due to time restraints, but an interesting thing that people often forget about is afikoymen. The Ramah writes in number 42, and we'll read this much inside. The Ramah writes, "V'lo yoychal v'lo yishta harbe yois midai. Do not eat too much at Shulchan Aruch." And we started opening up about Shulchan Aruch, about what you could eat. So we said you can have potatoes, you can have potato kugel and potatoes, that could all be roasted. You can have roasted vegetables, that's okay. You can have grilled vegetables, just can't have grilled chicken and can't have grilled steak. But Dr. Rama, don't eat too much. Why? You don't want to eat the afikoymen when you're full. For many of us, that's usually the way we eat the afikoymen, is we're very full. Says Mr. Brent, this is very, very important. He writes, Tahainu, she'ena misava klal echol. You have no desire to eat food. How many people get to afikoymen and they're like, oh no, really? Like now, you know, we finally got to the meal and we got our dessert and we got our three courses. Now, like more matzah. Says the Mishnah something very important. He writes, "Sha'oz eine oise mitzvah menamufcho." You're not doing the mitzvah properly. Shav shafikoymen uzeichel pesach. Even though afikoymen was to commemorate the korban pesach, the pesach nechal saiva. And we know that the korban pesach itself was eaten after you were already full. The hainu shusoiva kvar ulechein. That's why we eat the afikoymen at the conclusion of the meal. Mikomakun. You have to have a little bit of an appetite. So if you are full, packed to the gill when it comes to afikoymen, you're not really being yotze mitzvah afikoymen. Forgetting what time you're eating the afikoymen. Whether you're eating it before chatzos, you're eating it after chatzos, you made the avdei nezer tonight, you didn't make the avdei nezer tonight. Forget it. If you're full, you're not yotze mitzvah properly. So it means that it's like, I look at it like dessert. There's always room for dessert. But then there's sometimes where, you know, you're so full, you can't even look at food. I think, but in the last line, if you're mamish disgusted by it, you push yourself, you're not yoytze. So we got to really balance our menu at Shulchan Aruch to make sure we're not eating too much, that we're not yoytze. First, we want to be yoytze mitzvah min hamufchar, and secondly, we want to make sure yoytze mitzvah, period. Therefore, try to eat a little less at Shulchan Aruch so you can have room for the afikoymen.